welcome to our Q 2018-19 results call. As usual, please take note of our disclaimer. I will now hand you over to Olaf to present our Q2 results.
Thank you, Sabrina, and good morning, everyone. Welcome to the results call for the second quarter 2018-19. As we outlined before, this is the year of intensification, and it's all about making sure that our focus on wholesale continues to progress. In that sense, on a nutshell view on what we have achieved in the quarter, it's fair to say that despite some calendar shift due to the Easter situation, we could show a good momentum on like-for-like for the continued business in the wholesale division. We also could see that our progress in the two strategic target groups, being HoReCa and Trader, continued to progress. We also saw progress in transformation in various parts of our business, leading then to an earnings quality, which is encouraging, and at the bottom line on the EPS growing, and Christian will explain much more in detail in a few moments. Before we go there, let's have a look into the hypermarket division and there into the sale process. Without referencing too much into the recent past and how we have been preparing for this for a number of years now, we are now entering the final part of the process of stepping out of the hypermarket business. Among various attributes, we have selected a consortium led by a company called Rhodos to grant them exclusivity for negotiation in the upcoming 12 weeks. We have done this on the back of a business which has preconditions for the future that were convincing for that consortium to make a bid for HoldCo. This is, of course, one of the key reasons why we have chosen them for exclusivity, among others, like making sure we are not running into any complications on the antitrust side. Having assessed this carefully and having negotiated with the Rhodos-led consortium, we have come to an exclusivity agreement, which, and I need to emphasize this, is not a signed contract, but that leads to a couple of observations and assessments that, of course, we would like to share with you at this moment in time. The current assumptions, the current parameters of the exclusivity agreement indicate an enterprise value for HoldCo, so PropCo and OpCo, of roughly 1 billion euros. At the moment of closing the transaction, which would, of course, happen a few months after signing, which we would envision in summer, at the moment of closing, we would anticipate a cash-in of roughly 500 million, 500 million in that moment of time to come into the books of Metro. Having said all of that, we also have agreed with the party that Metro will remain a minority partner on the OpCo side, also to support a smooth transition and to ensure a value creation in the operations. This is not without an end. This has a clear due date, which is in 3 years after closing the transaction. It is also contractually anticipated to have a clear put and also to have a clear cap on how far our financial commitment can go. Given all of those parameters, we also conducted an adjustment in our discontinued operations in the balance sheet in the magnitude of 385 million euros. These are all non-cash relevant impairments. Having said all of this, I would now hand over to Christian, and he will give you much more detail on the financial performance of the first half year and the second quarter.
Thank you, Olaf, and good morning, everyone. Let us start with the drivers of the sales development in Q2. We have achieved resilient like-for-like growth of 1.2%, where in the previous quarter, we observed a very positive development in the same way in Eastern Europe and in Asia. Adjusted for the Easter shift, like-for-like sales grew on the same level as the very good level in Q1 2018-19. Delivery sales grew by roughly 9% and now accounted for 20% of total sales in this quarter. The reported growth in euro terms came in at 0.2% due to currency effects, especially in Russia and Turkey, while growth in local currency was at 1.6%. The EBITDA, excluding real estate gains, amounted to 83 million euros in Q2, and in the six-month period, EBITDA decreased by 62 million to 553 million euros. In constant currency, this equals to 41 million euro, or a minus 6.9% reduction in EBITDA, which is in line with our expectations. As we confirmed in the Q1 results call, the transaction in Bangalore on the real estate side has in the meantime crystallized, and this transaction led to a profit amounting to around 30 million euros. We continue to expect 250 to 300 million euros gain from real estate transactions for fiscal year 18-19. We have a number of projects at an advanced stage to fulfill the guidance, with the majority of gains still expected in Q4. Having said that, let's move to our regional performance. Let me start with Metro Germany, where like-for-like sales decreased by 3.1% in Q2, and that is predominantly driven by the Easter shift. Adjusted for the Easter shift, sales were roughly flat, which you can also see by looking at the 7 months number, where Germany is trading at plus 0.8% like-for-like growth. The EBITDA decline is also mainly attributable to the Easter shift. We have also remodeled 4 stores under the so-called BIG concept. This stands for Best in Gastronomy and has meanwhile been rolled out to 10 out of the 53 large stores. In Metro Western Europe, due to the Easter effect, the like-for-like growth came in at minus 0.3%. Excluding Easter, it came in at plus 1.1%. Last year's EBITDA benefited from a one-time gain. Adjusted for this, EBITDA grew, driven by various countries that performed well in the region. Moving on to Russia, where like-for-like sales came in at minus 4%, which is slightly below the Q1 level, but still a strong improvement against the previous year. This development continues to be driven by the BMPL assortment, which, as you are aware, has been increased over time. On the right side of the chart, you can see how the corresponding assortment shows a marked response within a few months following the introduction, with a very much same pattern for the first and the second wave. Nonetheless, volume response is not yet at the level that we aspire to, and we will continue to invest into the price positioning, particularly on the core trader assortment. On the other hand, EBITDA declined by 5 million euros year on year, which is roughly 40 basis points margin pressure. This strong improvement versus previous quarters is a combination of some initial COGS improvements and the continuing cost savings. For the remainder of the year, we expect to see further improvements in margin development stemming from a combination of cost savings and COGS improvements, and of course, supported by the expected sales development. In Eastern Europe, we once again generated strong like-for-like growth of 6.8%. The growth has been driven by the majority of countries, and especially by the trader business in Romania, as well as the HoReCa growth in Turkey. Due to negative currency effect, especially in Turkey, total revenue increased by only 2.4%. EBITDA, excluding real estate gains, declined by 3 million euros to 42 million euros in this quarter. In constant currency, EBITDA, excluding real estate gains, is largely on previous year level. In the Asia segment, like-for-like sales have grown by 3.6%, with all countries showing a positive like-for-like development and a particularly strong development in China and in India, where in total now, EBITDA came in that segment largely flat year on year. On the other segment, EBITDA decreased slightly as costs for IT increased, also driven by the continued rollout of our digital interface for delivery and others. This development was countered by a small one-time gain. Moving further down the P&L, the depreciation has slightly increased, resulting in a lower EBIT than in the previous year. Net financial result has improved mainly due to better refinancing conditions, and the tax rate in this quarter stood at 38% and is therefore in line with our full-year expectation of 37% to 39%. These two effects, tax rate and improved net financial results, resulted in Q2 EPS from continuing operations slightly increasing by 3 euro cents, higher than last year. As a result of the advanced stage of negotiations, we have booked a non-cash impairment of 385 million euros in the discontinued operation this quarter, therefore resulting in an EPS from discontinued operations of minus 1 euro 17 cents. Reported EPS including discontinued operations amounted to minus 1 euro 26 cents compared to minus 15 euro cents in Q2 last year. The result was heavily impacted by the previously mentioned impairment in discontinued operations. Reported EPS pre-impairment totaled minus 20 euro cents or 5 euro cents below last year. The decline is mainly due to the EBITDA development in discontinued operations, which is mostly driven by the tariff and Easter effects. We now go to the free cash flow. This has improved by 62 million compared to last year. The change in net working capital amounted to minus 572 million euros in Q2 compared to roughly 600 million euros negative also in the last year. This improvement, despite the Easter shift, is driven by some operational improvements and also supported by certain timing effects. Despite the encouraging performance, we maintain our full-year expectation of largely flat change in net working capital against a very strong net working capital performance that we have seen in the last year. CapEx in Q1 came in 36 million euro lower than last year, driven by a lower number of new store openings. All in all, our simplified operational free cash flow came in at roughly minus 550 million euros in the quarter compared to roughly 610 minus in last year's quarter. From the full cash flow perspective, the picture looks slightly different, but this is really mainly due to timing effects that I will quickly elaborate. The operating cash flow, if you look at the full financial statement on the cash flow side, from continued operations came in at approximately minus 680 million euros versus roughly minus 640 million euro last year, whereby the lower usage of restructuring provisions and the better networking capital development were countered by higher cash taxes and an increase in other operating cash flow, mainly driven by temporary VAT effects. Investing cash flow has significantly improved from last year due to lower CapEx and higher cash in from real estate transactions, and the financing cash flows really only impacted by the various levels of net borrowings in that sense. Finally, net debt stood at 3.6 billion euros at the end of March, which is broadly in line with the previous year. That was a run through our key financials. I'll now hand back over to Olaf to discuss the strategic developments of Metro in more detail.
Yeah, thank you, Christian. And let's have a brief look into our strategic focus. And here, let's begin with the HoReCa target group. We have achieved a growth of 3.2% in a quarter, which also has been, of course, been impacted by the Easter shift. And the momentum that we have seen in previous quarters continues to grow. And this on the back of quite a number of initiatives that we are rolling out locally. Today, we will give you a very brief view on three. Let me start with Turkey. Turkey, as you know, in the last years has shown a quite significant growth momentum in the HoReCa industry, and it's fair to say Metro Turkey has established itself as one of the leading brands in the hospitality sector. Now, in this case, the Turkish team has used the relaunch of our own brands. 2018 marked the year of the relaunch of our private label strategy to actually use that on a localized approach, and they call that geographically indicated products that you can use as restaurateur to enhance your menu and show your customers that you take care about the local taste, the local origin, the local culture. The whole program has been developed inclusively with restaurateurs across various regions and has then been rolled out, and in 1 month we were able to sell more than 15,000 menus that have been co-created. It's, I think, a clear indicator not only about how we are enhancing our own brand position, but how we are establishing ourselves as a strong partner of the HoReCa community in Turkey. In France, I think it's well known that Metro France is continuously working on assortment, on service level, on innovation. I think what is less known is how much Metro France is activating the workforce and how much attention they pay to motivate every associate in the shop floor, in goods receiving, at the welcome desk, in the headquarters, to put yourself in the shoes of a customer and permanently rethink how can we serve better. And the current version of the program in France is called Brigade. Brigade is, as you know, also the claim or the label for the teams in the restaurants that are actually working in the kitchen and are preparing the meals for the customers. We are calling that the same, and we have the same principle because collectively we can enhance the way we are serving our target groups. And this we do store by store in an individualized basis, and we do that for those selected target groups per store. That means we have cross-functional teams that on a voluntary basis are sitting together various times a week in challenging ourselves, how are we doing for that specific target group, i.e. the traditional French restaurant. What is good, what is superb, what is missing, and what is not good, and then enhancing products on shelf, enhancing the way we display the products, but also how we are servicing them and how we are explaining customers the ways how they can use the product. This is a continuous improvement process a la française, so to say, and it's a driver for growth that is certainly helping us already in this fiscal year to continue to work on a successful growth on a business which already is certainly a leading business in the French market. Another example is Spain. And here I think we can give a clear indicator that NPS for us is not just statistics or a metrics. We are using the Net Promoter Score to continuously improve the way we are operating. And this is owned by the leadership, and the executive team of Macro Spain is on a permanent tour throughout the country to make sure that they take advantage of all of those insights and together with the associates, the floor manager, the store manager, make necessary adjustments to grow the business. Now let me go and look into one of the key enablers for success in the future of our business, and that of course is digitalizing the core. And as Christian already mentioned, we have incurred some more cost in the headquarters for developing our digital suite. And one of our most important tools is M-Shop. M-Shop is the front end for ordering at Metro. And as you can see, we meanwhile have rolled this out to 17 countries. We have two versions of it. One is the HoReCa front end, which of course is tailor-made for their demand. It's much more flexible in quantities. You can order products by weight. Of course, it also is very much individualized on pricing. And it also, of course, also is validating product availability on a very detailed level. So it's tailor-made for a restaurateur to take advantage of a front-end, which is much easier to use than anything we had been supplying before. For traders, of course, the same principle, but then different functionality. A buy more, pay less, of course, comes alongside with minimum quantities and has pre-configured baskets that traders can take advantage of. So all in all, it should, and actually it does, make the buying experience easier and more convenient. And as a result, our online ordering share, meanwhile, is at 40%. It comes without saying that the cost of an order significantly declines once it's conducted online. And the service level, of course, also is significantly improved. Just to remind you, in December 2018, the share of online ordering was at 30%. So we have an absolute growth of 10% in that short period of time, which we feel is very encouraging. Let's move on to Trader, and let's have a look on how we are doing there. Here we had seen a growth of 4.6%, which means we are continuing to see the good momentum. And also here, I would like to give you a bit more insight into three good examples on how we are taking this very seriously, and we are focusing on the target group of Trader as much as we do focus on the target group of HoReCa. Romania has shown significant improvement over the course of the last years. Now, the good thing about Romania is they are never satisfied with what they do, and they continue to push the envelope. So having seen the success on Buy More, Pay Less, having seen the success of massification, the journey continues, and the number of pallet presentations continues to grow, but also the way we are placing the pallets now even closer to entrance into the cashier zone are things that are very intuitive, things sometimes you might even say that are obvious, but things that the team here is continuously identifying and optimizing, as much as they also pay attention to the fact that we're not only servicing the trader, we're servicing other B2B customers, but to enhance the flow throughout the store is one way to also enhance the convenience and the effectiveness of the buying experience, which is another driver for the continued significant growth we are experiencing at Metro Romania. In India, we have been pretty successful in turning that business finally profitable last year, and our focus on Kirana continues to advance in a way that we are now taking a similar view on the Kirana business or the trader business like we do on the hospitality. So we spoke a lot about hospitality digital in previous quarters. It's now time to make you aware about the Smart Kirana program, which is a program which has an online and an offline component. The online, of course, is a digital POS and a number of tools that will enhance the attractiveness of the Kirana. The offline component is a fully fledged upgrade of store operations, and therefore turning a business which today is very traditional over the counter into a real store, and helping customers to do the layout and the remodeling at low cost, but therefore then enhancing significant double-digit growth in their business. And of course, that has an implication for the relationship to Metro and lets our share of wallet grow. Final one, Makro Poland. I think it's a good example on, once again, our focus on employees and associates being the decisive success factor. Similar to France, here we have taken an approach which wants to make sure that everyone in the store is aware that you are part of the sales force, no matter where you are, on the welcome desk, behind the counter, at the checkout. And for this, Makro Poland has developed a program and an academy that educates essentially every single one in the operations, and that has led to a significant turnaround over the last years, and the program is permanently enhanced. So with all of that, let's move on, and let's have a look into how we are doing and how we are looking into the future. So first of all, the first 6 months give us a clear confirmation of our direction, and certainly the confidence that we are well on track on the anticipated intensification. As a result, I'm also happy to confirm our guidance for 18-19 of 1 to 3% sales growth at constant currency, following a 2.1% in the first quarter and a 1.6% growth in the second quarter. And then a 1 to 3% like-for-like growth after 2.3% in Q1 and 1.2% in Q2. Our sales development will be driven by Eastern Europe, including Russia, actually, and Asia, also in the next quarters. For Russia, still we expect a trend improvement. EBITDA, excluding gains from real estate transactions, at constant currency, we expect to be minus 2% to minus 6% below last financial year. With regard to technical effects that we await for the next quarter, we expect to have some tailwind from Easter shift, of course, as we had some headwind this quarter. Also, Q3 last year has been impacted by a one-time loss in the segment Others in the magnitude of roughly 20 million euro and a one-time gain of roughly 10 million euro in the segment Russia. With regards to real estate transactions, we continue to expect 250 to 300 million EBITDA contribution from this financial year, and the majority of the transactions will be back-ended. However, the vast majority of transactions are very well advanced. Last but not least, please take note of our upcoming events, roadshows, and reporting dates. On May 14th, our investor relations teams will be attending the conference in London on 15th of May and 16th of May in Frankfurt. Also, I want to use the opportunity to invite you as well to come and visit us and to show you more what we're doing in our operations and also very much on the digital side as we are progressing in enhancing the business model of wholesale. And with this, let me open the Q&A session.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we'll begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star followed by one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star followed by two. If you are using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selections. Anyone who has a question may press star followed by one at this time. And one moment for the first question, please. The first question comes from the line of Maxi Mallet of Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead. Your line is open. Please go ahead with your question.
Yes, sorry, was on mute. Thanks for taking my question. The first one is on Real and notably the process that you are going through. So my understanding is that you are, well, under this process, selling 100% of the real estate of Real, but keeping 25% of the operation, which would imply that on your P&L, it would have an impact as the 25% of, well, losses for now and profit at some point in the future will be through the associate line. And then on top of that, you would also have to pay basically 25% of the rents from Real to the real estate entity. Just wanted to confirm that. And if you have an idea of what this kind of impact would have been, for example, in 2017-18. The second one was with regard to the lower financial costs that you have in Q1, getting a sense whether Q1 level for the financial cost is a good idea of what it's going to be for the remainder of the year and the coming quarters. The next one is with regard to Russia and notably the like-for-like. We see an evolution notably with the stores that moved to the BNPL process. Could you maybe give us the like-for-like, the exit rates of the like-for-like in Russia that you had in the quarter? And the last one is we've seen some news in the press, notably with regard to China and some potential discussion that you would have with some potential partners. Can you maybe update us on that front as well? Thank you.
Let me start with the first one. It's clear we will report at equity our participation in OPCO. As soon as we have concluded the transaction, as soon as it's closed, it will be a financial participation, which we will report 24.9% of that P&L. So this is our essential reporting transparency that we will have. There's no other agreement in place than that, other than a cap which we have put in to any other financial commitment on top of what the transaction parameter will say. And this is then linked to the three-year tenure of the 24.9%. The 24.9% also indicate that we are not taking a strategic view and that we are not having a control aspect in our equity participation. On China, before I hand over to Christian on the net financial cost, on China, the process is going well. The strategic rationale there is we have a great business. By no means we are dissatisfied with the quality of the business, nor are we dissatisfied with the progress in this fiscal year. I dare to say it's a high-performing business in a market which is not that easy for food retailers, but that's the word, retail. It's predominantly a retail business, also under the Metro banner, and therefore with our focus on wholesale and our direction to completely concentrate all our effort on wholesale, we have embarked into this journey in exploring how can we take advantage of the current situation and then potentially think about a B2B play in China. So there's not a lot much more than I can say than the ones, unfortunately, that you have seen in the media. The interest is significant. We are now embarking into a more focused process with selected parties, and I think we will be in a much better position to report back as of Q3. early August. But everything is in line with our expectation. In regard of momentum, actually, it's better. In regard of timing, we are just spot on the schedule.
Yes, and just to underline also Olaf's statement with respect to the expected at equity participation, so that will be then only a financial asset on the balance sheet, which will be assessed continuously for any changes in valuation, but it will not have another impact on our P&L. So that is in the assumption completely separate from our P&L then. With respect to the net financial costs, the guidance for the year is 150 million. And despite some good developments that we have seen in the first two quarters, we stick to those numbers. There are always there is always some volatility in those numbers. So the 150 is the one to stick to. With respect to the Russia like-for-like evolution of BNPL, as shown on the chart, how the dynamics are going in terms of the rollout, we have quoted 3% growth of volume in Q1. This is roughly the number with a slight uptick that we have been seeing on Q2 on this.
Thank you. Just maybe to make sure I understood that. With regard to the like-for-like in Russia, I was mentioning the like-for-like for, well, the whole of the Russian business, like the exit rate that you have.
Well, the like-for-like development in Russia is that minus 4%. In the most important segment in the meantime, from BNPL, you see that this is growing in the wave two, and the volume in BNPL is was in Q1 that 3%, and in Q2 it's slightly higher than that.
Okay, thank you.
The next question is from a line of Karen Fabina of Kepler Frankfurt. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, everyone. Three questions for me. First, detail for you, Christian, on the cash flow statement on the press release, page 18. Can you explain why the other lines is deteriorating from minus 165 to minus 237, as it was more or less flat in Q1, would be the first question. The second question as well on Russia. Could you give us a feeling how you would split the minus 4% between the customer groups? And the last one is more for Olaf regarding the like-for-like as a whole. When you give the 3.2% like-for-like for Horeca, I understand that it's for all the Horeca customers within the group. When you give the traders number of 4.6%, it's not the same definition because it's mainly the trader countries excluding Russia. What would be the like-for-like for traders if you use the same definition as for the Horeca, please? Thank you.
Yes, Fabienne, with respect to that question on that other cash flow line, as mentioned in the call, that is the time effect that we do have there. These are non-income taxes around VAT and other topics. It's various countries that just slip between one quarter and the other, something that is expected to reverse in the ongoing quarters. So
okay.
Nothing from a structural nature.
Okay.
The next question
on Russia, the split of the 4%, but we are not disclosing the split by target group. What we can say is that, of course, the buy more, pay less that Christian was referring to, of course, is very much geared to support the trader business. We can also report back that the Fazol business is making encouraging progress. But I beg your pardon, we are not splitting up the number here for Russia at this moment in time. On your question in regard of why are we showing the Horeca and the trader differently, it follows, I think, a simple strategic rationale, Fabian. One is Horeca, essentially in all countries, will have a strategic angle somehow. Even in a trader-denominated country, we will have a Horeca nucleus, and that most often is then the mega cities or the capital of the country. Take Russia. It's a trader country. By no means we are deviating from that strategy, but in St. Petersburg, in Sochi, in Moscow, we are focusing on Horeca, and that's why we are also then showing those numbers to indicate how much progress we see throughout the portfolio, because Horeca essentially is applicable to all. Trader is not applicable to all. I'll give you another example. in a Western European business where we are aiming to get into a share of 60-70% plus of HoReCa like we have in France, like we are aiming for in other places, we consciously dilute the trader volume. So we consciously step away from businesses that we have been serving there as of the choice that we want to strategically build our stronger position in HoReCa. That's why we separate the trader-denominated countries, and we are only tracking those. And going back to the other example, in India, the focus must be completely on trade. The HoReCa, for example, is marginal.
Okay, I understand, and it makes all sense. But then I think it would be useful if we could have the like-for-like traders as you defined it with and maybe as well without, and then including Russia, if you could have two numbers, because Russia is still a trader country.
Fair point. And for us, that is clearly in line with our turnaround focus on Russia. And we said as of the turnaround, of course, Russia needs to be included. Fully accepted. That is absolutely clear.
Okay. Thanks, Olaf.
The next question is from the line of Andrew Gwynn of Exane. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Just a couple of quick questions. Again, unfortunately, on Russia. I mean, obviously, the momentum, the minus 4%, goes against a very, frankly, easy comparative. When do you think you can get yourself back into positive like-for-like momentum? Obviously, the base of comparison does get much more difficult as we progress. And obviously the volume progression, as you mentioned, is a little bit below your expectations. So a bit more color there would be very much appreciated. And the operational detail through the subsidiaries was sort of gratefully received. Turkey, obviously, you've pulled out in particular, but obviously Turkey very inflationary at the moment. So I'm just wondering if there's a volume component to that. And then more generally, within the Eastern European segment, what's the volume versus inflation split of that total like-for-like? Thank you.
On the Russian angle, it's clear that our ambition needs to be to turn to positive like-for-like. The reason why we continue to be very confident on that is the volume uptick we've seen now consistently for quite a long period. We have seen, on the other hand, market circumstances not enhancing, neither on customers, customer mood, nor disposable income for food purchases. That means that we remain confident and we are optimistic we will move into territory of like-for-like positive, but I would be ill-advised to say this is exactly the quarter where that will happen. But rest assured, our ambition is to push the envelope as much as we can, that is not in the distant future. And as we said, we want to see the trend change in the fiscal year 18-19. Now, it's fair to say the second quarter was a bit slower. That also has some technical effect that has a bit of impact of Expo sales, which shift from one month to the other. And therefore, I would not say we have a trend change. But for the second half, the trend needs to improve. And that is clearly our own ambition and the ambition of the local team in Russia.
With respect to the question to Turkey, volume, yes, in Turkey we are growing also the volume in a relevant way, despite also support in that country by inflation. When you then look into the overall countries, and that especially in Eastern Europe, yes, there is a certain way of inflation, but the countries overall are also relevantly increasing their volume setting. And compared to the prior year, there is no relevant additional support by inflation in those jurisdictions.
Do you have the number, sorry, for inflation in Eastern Europe as a segment? Mostly the like-for-like looks very strong, so I just want to understand the sort of drivers of that.
Well, no, we don't give that number. What we do is we look into inflation, both the reported one very obviously, and then the one which is internal that really takes into account the appropriate assortment that we are trading in. But we don't give the overall numbers there. Volume in most of the Eastern European jurisdictions has gone up quite relevantly. In the total of 6.8%, there is a very relevant component in there that is volume-driven.
Okay, yeah, that's good. Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Jürgen Elsers of Commerzbank. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. This is Jürgen. Sorry, I have two questions. One is again on Russia. Is it right to or fair to understand that you are at the moment not satisfied with the volume growth, that Buy More, Pay Less should have had the hope of higher volume growth? Does that imply that going forward you will have higher price investments in order to satisfy the expectations in terms of volume growth? That's the one question on Russia. And then just on the Real disposal again, I would like to learn more about the maximum financial downside that you engage with the in with the 24.9% stake. Obviously, in the second quarter, the Real loss, and that included the freehold portfolio, was somewhat like 40 million, if I am calculating the things correctly. Now, the 24.9% stake is only in the OpCo. I understand that you're not showing it in the P&L, but how did you manage to sort of limit the maximum financial downside, and what maximum financial downside do you see once the deal is done?
So on Russia, I would say the following. I think the volume uptick we have seen on Buy More, Pay Less, I would call it encouraging. It's actually faster than what we've seen in Romania. The rollout has been more impactful in a short period of time than at the time when we started this in Romania. You remember we showed the reference case of Romania, which took us 2 years. So it's encouraging. Are we satisfied? Honestly, Jürgen, we are not. And we will not be satisfied until we will see positive like-for-likes and an earnings trend improvement. So we are dissatisfied by nature with the current approach, but we're encouraged. So what we are saying is it makes all sense to intensify on the strategic direction, but it leads to as well some more adjustments. And that will imply that we will invest into price here and there. So I'm not backing off from that question. Yes, there will be some more price investment. On the other hand, we are also expecting that the impact of the other strategic initiatives, the Fasol network and our share of wallet that we can gain there, alongside additional improvement both on the cost savings and the terms and conditions with industry, will help us to get the balance right. So, as I said, very encouraged, but by no means satisfied.
Olaf, can I just quickly ask back on in-store shelf price inflation? Obviously, Rostat reported 5.8% inflation for the quarter. How has the shelf price inflation contributed to the minus 4% like-for-like?
Well, this one I would really lead to the IR team to give you some more detail. I think the statistics that are disclosed are quite confusing, and it depends, of course, as well on the categories and the mix. So would ask you to get back with the IR team. They can give you some more color to that, but probably would take too much time at this moment in time.
Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Let me
And on Real?
On Real, without disclosing numbers, one thing I can certainly say is, first of all, we need to respect that we have an exclusivity agreement. It's not a signed SPA. We're now in the process of working out all the details. So all the parameters that we have disclosed are based on the current state of negotiation, number one. Number two, we have clearly showed our willingness and our readiness to support the transition of OpCo, but we clearly said this cannot be unlimited. It cannot be unlimited in time, and it cannot be unlimited in funding. And therefore, we have a clear exit after 3 years. And we have a cap that limits our financial exposure to a number which at this moment we cannot and should not disclose, but it's clearly limited and it's not out of range. Therefore, we will disclose it, of course, once we have the signed SPA, then we can give more figures to that.
Okay. Thank you.
We now take our last question from the line of Dusan Milosavljevic of Berenberg. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Just three questions from me, please. The first one, you were flagging the one-off gains in the other segment. Maybe I missed on the call. Maybe you flagged it, but just can you quantify how significant those were? Well, actually, the second question is in relation to, or do you want to answer the first one and then we can move?
Happy to take the first one. That is a high single-digit euro million amount.
Okay, thank you. The second question is just in relation to if you haven't commented on this explicitly before, but just target leverage and generally where you'd like to get your balance sheet to and any other capital allocation comments, especially in relation to 500 million inflows from Real.
Well, I think at this stage we feel quite comfortable and solid from a balance sheet perspective. Again, S&P has confirmed in January our investment grade rating, and with respect to any expected or potential proceeds from a transaction that is just in the making, we would refer to that very stage once we have confirmed that transaction.
Fair. And just the last question, appreciate obviously it's difficult to put a timeline on Russia like-for-likes inflecting, but can you maybe comment on how satisfied you are with your cash generation profile and any technical factors and kind of when can we expect maybe inflection in free cash flow? And any comment around that, you know, the kind of the timing effect this year by quarter relative to next year?
Well, I commented that earlier. I think it's not sensible to give you a specific quarter where we're going to have that breakthrough. I think what we can say is the trend change, that's what we committed to, and that's what we want to see, and we will see throughout the second half of the year. And, of course, for the full calendar year, I think we have a good chance to show a trend improvement. And let's not forget, the first quarter was just 2.8% negative. So that means we are seeing a base which we are probably able then to beat in the foreseeable future. But as I said, now to give you a specific quarter, it's just replacing not knowing right now because it's the future with wrong anticipation. So let's not go there. Our commitment remains the same, second quarter trend improvement, and that's what we need to deliver.
Okay, thank you.
And this concludes the question and answer session. I hand back to Olaf, CEO, for closing comments.
Yeah, that concludes the session on Q2. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for having joined our conference call. Should you have any follow-up question, please reach out to our investor relations team. Thank you and have a great day.